Hey guys, welcome back to another edition of the Detour Live. I'm your host, Dan Jones, as always, joined by four-time national road champion, Johnny Chavarro. And Johnny, it's been a massive lead-up to the Tour de France. We're only a couple of weeks away. All the big lead-up races are in the can, so we should, on paper, have an idea of a bit of form, Johnny. Any surprises over the last week of racing?
Well, Dan, great to see you. It seems ages, probably only been about 5 or 6 days. But, look, there's no doubt all the people we were talking about have all shown some form, except for one.
Who?
Mr. Roglic. Mr. Roglic hasn't raced anywhere. He's gone into his own altitude training camp, whatever. He hasn't raced in any of the lead-up races. So very unusual. I reckon he's still smarting from last year. He doesn't want to go in hot. He wants to come in the other way and finish strong. That's right. My thoughts on it. We'll see what happens.
Well, another guy to get his expert opinion on, I think he's pouring himself a vino as we speak, is Scotty McGrory, who joins us now. Olympic gold medalist. Yes, very, very good, mate. It's Queen's birthday day, so have one for the Queen. But also, on a side note, it's obviously a day that they raise money for MND. And that's obviously got a cycling connection with the tragic passing of Gary West, who obviously had a lot to do with Adam Ears back in the day. So if anyone wants to donate to that cause, it's fightmnd.org.au. It's a great cause. So probably all got your beanies, and if you're Collingwood one today, so you're up and about.
Well, I did watch the MND slide. And it was fantastic, as it always is. And Neil Danaher, what a legend. He is just the most positive person I've ever heard speak. You just get goosebumps when you listen to him. He's quite amazing. Quite amazing.
Back to the cycling scooter. Obviously, I was saying it before, we've had all the big lead-up races. What are the key sort of standouts for you in terms of rider performance that you've seen?
Key standout, I think, is, and I look back up Johnny there with Primoz Roglic not riding yet, so it's hard to gauge what his form is. And I think, last year scarred him coming in. Remember, he was so good. Even though he crashed out of the Dauphiné before the Tour de France, Dauphiné or Romandie, whichever, I can't remember now, but he was the best. He seemed to be the best or the strongest rider up until he decided to pull out after having a crash and thinking he needed to recover a little bit after that. But he was so strong in the lead up to the Tour last year and then all the way through the Tour, right through to that final time trial. And he is completely flipping everything on its head this time and coming in without any racing. So this will be really interesting to see how he goes. But for me, it's just the strength of Ineos Grenadiers. Now, their depth of talent is just extraordinary. Look at Richie's form, winning Tour of Switzerland, who is himself a former winner of Giro d'Italia. Geraint Thomas was really strong also at the Dauphiné, but they had Theo Gegenhardt, a former winner of the Giro, last year's winner of the Giro, also riding in defence. You've got Adam Yates sitting there as well, a Grand Tour winner. Craig Costa.
No, he hasn't won a Grand Tour, right? He hasn't won a Grand Tour, his brother.
No, he hasn't won a Grand Tour, but he's won a... Oh, there you go. He should have then. But then you throw all the depth, so many incredibly talented riders that they've got to put together to create this incredible super team if they want to, you know, who can ride the Tour at the end. But that's the thing that stands out to me tonight, like who can get the better. Bernal obviously is not going to ride the Tour now after getting, that's already been banged on the head, he's not going to ride the Tour. But had he ridden the Tour de France, you've got the possibility of an incredible team, which then you also bring in, are they too strong? Well, we'll wait and see. You know, you've still got Pogacar, I guess, as the favourite because he's the defending champion. Can he beat the might of Ineos Grenadiers? I think that's the thing for me.
Well, one thing for sure, Scotty, UAE, they will not be going into Paris in their slippers like last time. They won't be. everyone knows about him now. So it's going to be a very different bike race.
I suppose another standout ride at the Tour of Swiss was Rigoberto Urán. He's really fighting form at the pointy end. I think, what was he, 17 seconds off Carapaz for the overall. This is a guy that when he's up and about, you know, he's finished podium on the Tour de France before, he's going to be one to watch out for sure, Scooter.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? And I think he's such a likable guy as well. So I think there'll be a lot of people that are supporting him anyway. But kind of like the race of the nice guys, isn't it? Pogacar, Roglic, Geraint Thomas, Rigoberto Urán. These, you know, they're all seem to be lovely guys, nice gentlemen. So it'll be, you know, an interesting battle.
Bring back Nibali. Bring back Nibali.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started. Well, I remember that. I remember talking about Urán. I remember that penultimate day when Chavez had the pink jersey, and Urán, obviously being Colombian, there was underlying, don't worry, if I'm there and I can help you, Esteban, I'll give you a hand. I never forgot that. So I don't mind Urán. He's a good guy. He's a good guy.
You know what? It's interesting what you're saying, Scotty, because you're spot on. But he hasn't shown that form for more than a year. So it was such a reversal of form. That was a pretty brutal time trial, you know, like up a mountain and down the other side. And he creamed them. He didn't just win it. He absolutely, daylight was second. So it was a wonderful performance.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? And that's what, look, we were sort of thinking, I reckon, going into this year, that depending on what Bernal's program was going to be, it was going to be another, you know, cruisy ride for Pogacar. Maybe Roglic will come back. But you throw in some extra riders now. And Geraint Thomas is back to, you know, pretty good form. And look, the other one, he's not riding the tour, but you know, if he hadn't had that accident last year, but that was Remco Evenepoel. You know, we've seen how quickly he has come back. Remember during the Giro when he was starting to struggle, I did say, give him a month. This guy is going to be at another level and back to being superhuman. Well, it's been less than a month, and he's already come away with the win in Belgium. So he's already showing how much that Giro has put into that incredible physiology that he has. And those sorts of riders, they just take incredible steps with that kind of racing in their legs, and he's on his way back. Watch him at the Vuelta, probably not at the Tour, though.
No, not Ryan the Tour. He will win the Vuelta. He's my pick for the Vuelta right now, because I was so impressed with him in this last week. Okay, Tour of Belgium's got no big climbs or anything like that, but, you know, it was to come back like that and just dominate it, very, very impressive.
I've got a question for you. What did Team Bike Exchange do leading into the Tour de France this year? Obviously, Lewis Hamilton's going to be riding the overall. Chavez was having a crack at Swiss. Given the depth of the GC guys at the pointy end, I mean, that is the cream of the cream. Do you just go all chips in and try ride GC? Or do you say, okay, let's ride it a bit soft in the first 10 days and try and pinch a stage in that second half of the Tour when these GC teams are sort of not going to be as fresh and try and get in a break?
A combination of what you just said, mate. It'll be no chips in for GC. But, you know, they'll give the boys with GC a chance, but the team will not be, you know, doing anything on the front. They're going for stage wins. So there's no doubt that Simon Yates is in there to win a mountain stage. And he's going to come out in great form out of the Giro. Definitely not for GC. I don't think he would even finish it, because the Olympics is a big thing for him and he's set for it. So I wouldn't be surprised that he doesn't finish, because only 6 days after Paris, the road race in Japan. So I think it's all chips in for stage victories. And I don't think they'll be going easy early, because I think they reckon Michael Matthews can win one or either of those first 2 days, because they're really hard finishes in Brittany. We know Mur de Bretagne, whatever it's called, that's day two. We've raced up that. Riccadel won his only stage the year he won the Tour. And the day before, he's got a similar type finish that no one's actually seen before. So I think Michael Matthews will be in that mix early on.
Do you think they're going to be going for the green jersey with bling?
Why not?
I think that'll be in the back of their mind, but we know that when he got it, and this is no disrespect whatsoever, but when he got it last time, you had Kittel, who was smashing everyone in the sprints, and then, you know, ended up not finishing the Tour. Sagan, same situation. You know, he was obviously the favourite, then ended up having not finishing the Tour. So he inherited the jersey. Regardless of how you get it, doesn't matter. He got it in the end. But he wouldn't be going in as the favourite for green, but it's certainly in the back of their mind. Like all the sprinters, they want to go to try and win a stage. Once they've won a stage, okay, what else can they do? And that's when they start thinking about the jersey a bit more, I guess, legitimately. But they want to get that stage win first. Hamilton was also in good form, though, before he had to pull out last week. So it was gastro, the guys had to pull out. He was showing really good form and climbing you know, just behind the absolute best guys or virtually right there with them. So, and a bit of gastro, a bit of, you know, deli belly, a bit of barley belly, strips those last 1 or 2 kilos off, can be great for the race. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, four of them of the Bike Exchange team were out with you know, upset tummies, which is just bad luck. But look, it's interesting, isn't it? We're talking about the tour. It's only 2 weeks away. Less. It was 2 weeks on Saturday. So, going back to Team Bike Exchange, I do reckon it'll be all out for stages, and they've got quite a few different ones to fly. I think you'll get a couple of guys who'll try and lose some time early on so they can get that break on day 3 or 4 and get led up the road. There'll be a few doing that old trick. But it can be very interesting. I'm looking forward to the first couple of days in Brittany. I love Brittany. It's sensational, windswept roads. You know, it's always fantastic racing.
How hard, Scoot, is it getting for teams to say, we want to have a GC focus if you don't have the budget? Like, if you don't, you look at the list of Ineos and who they've got pulling on the front. Is this something you reckon teams are going to be like, something needs to be done, or it just is what it is?
I think it is just what it is, but the conversation will continue about salary caps, because, you know, the reason that Ineos have the incredible talent and depth of talent that they have is because they have so much money to pay these riders. You know, and that's what I say. You've got, you know, Adam Yates with Teo Gegenhardt, you know, throwing a Rowan Dennis, you know, saw what he did at the Giro last year. Philippe Ganna, you know, then you've got
Richie.
Richie Porte, Geraint Thomas, you know, Martinez, you know, look how strong he was for Bernal. Yep. All of those guys into one team and ride the Tour de France, like their biggest challenge is within their own team. So, you know, that's where the discussion starts. Are they too strong? Is it bad for the sport? At the moment, it hasn't been. The racing's been fantastic. Mm. Pogacar is the defending champion of the Tour de France. Roglic was his biggest rival. So right now, I don't think it's a valid discussion, because they're not as completely dominant over the last 8 months as perhaps they were previously with Froome, and then we go before him. And this guy's still only young, isn't he? You know, Pogacar. Mm. So he's got plenty of time to come. And he just won his home tour. He's on good form. It's a soft win for him, you know, without disrespecting the people he beat, but, you know, it wasn't against the absolute tour contenders. Ulissi was second overall, and he's not one of the favourites for the Tour de France or the Giro or the Vuelta. Still, it's just a show of form from him, and maybe an easier race for him building into the Tour de France. Man, he didn't have to go so deep, which I think is probably a really good thing. He hasn't had to go and race a World Tour race or decided to not ride one of the real big ones leading into the Tour de France. Going with great form, he'll be jumping out of his skin.
No, most of what you say, but I think I'd rather be having a Tour de Suisse or a Dauphiné in my legs just 2 weeks before the tour than something soft. But I was impressed with the way he won one of the earlier stages. He just hit him early, right away. It was just. Just almost disregarded everyone and just showed what he could do. So, no, his form's good. And he's my favourite, my pick. I think as good as Ineos are, I don't think they've got a rider that can beat him. They'll have to beat him with tactics more than just the strength of their team. They'll have to be using the fact that they've got 3 guys, maybe 4 guys capable of winning to put up the road. That's going to be the tactic they're going to have to play to beat Pogacar, because UAE, they're much stronger than last year, but they're still not the same league as Ineos.
Well, you love making big statements, Iffy. This could really work in the hands of Richie Porte if he's used as that early decoy.
Without doubt.
Takes the lead and just holds on to it.
Without doubt, mate. Yep.
Mm. You want to make a big statement now, or do you want to wait?
My big statement is the end of last year, when I saw that he signed with Ineos back with his old Sky team, I thought, good on you, mate. You've got your third in the Tour de France, you know, and now take the money and sit back and sort of take it easy. Hadn't been like that at all. He's come back with renewed vigour. He's got as good a form as he's ever had. His win in the Dauphiné was sensational, but he's, you know, second in, was it Romandy or whatever? Not long ago, he's the second and third were just as good. So he is in fantastic form. Now, he got no illusions that he's going in there to back Gee, Geraint Thomas is the man. But, hey, Carapaz is right there. And Teo Gegenhardt, you know, winner of the last year's Giro. They're all guys, and they need to throw all of these guys out there into different scenarios that are going to give them a chance. They have to put Pogacar under a lot of pressure. They know what he can do. And a lot of time trials in this, a flattish time trials. Pogacar's very good at a time trial, as is Thomas. Thomas probably slightly better, but not much.
Another rider who's in good form. Sorry.
Just with Roglic's time trialing ability as well, so it actually really makes the time trial stages far more interesting, doesn't it? To think that you've got three big favourites that are very good against the clock, so that'll be pretty good. The other good time trialer is not named in the tour team just yet, but you know we expect him to be in, I guess, is Rowan Dennis from an Australian perspective. The challenge with that though is I don't feel that if they're going in to try and win, so it's not as if he can back off. To freshen up or start preparing for the Olympic Games time trial, which is his big focus this year. So there's a bit of a challenge for what I see for Rowan's perfect preparation for the Olympics is perhaps not to ride the entire Tour de France, which he's going to have to do if he started. So that'll be an interesting turnaround as well. Now, the time trial's 4 days after three days after the road race. In Tokyo, but still, it's a pretty big turnaround with travel, etc. He's not going to be, you know, much specific training done in the Olympic time trial. He doesn't care about the road race; it's all about the time trial. So we'll see how that plays out for him because this is his best chance to get an Olympic medal.
Yeah, that will be interesting, and he's such a great support rider as he showed last year in the Giro, and it will be important. I just thought I know we've got a special guest coming on soon, but to a couple of things that have raised got the headline. One was Van Aert has been fined $1 million Aussie, €600,000. For breaking his contract when he left that team that you've got up there in the photo, Quillen, Charles, or whatever they were called back then. They sued and lost. So Van Aert won the original case. They appealed and they've won the appeal. And now Van Aert is talking about appealing as well. But it doesn't look too appealing to me, $1 million.
So what was the situation there? He left the team. They owed money with is it the transfer fee or what? How's it work?
He was leaving the team. They said no. The team was changing sponsors and ownership. He felt that they'd broken their contract with one part of it anyway. So he just left, went to Jumbo. They sued him and lost. So they were suing him for breaking contract, but they lost it. They appealed and they've won the appeal and now he's got to pay $600,000.
That's a fair chunk of change.
Yeah, anyway. But also indicates how much this is like he was obviously a good rider then, but much more of a cyclocross specialist and showing that he was a good roadie as well. But since then, since he went to Jumbo, you know, we've seen just how incredible he is. But it also indicates just how much money that these guys were on as elite cyclocross riders that could ride the road as well, and that's something that's really changed, you know, over the last probably 10-15 years, you know, just the amount of money. This is nothing like, you know, professional football and soccer, you know, European football, not Australian football, but and all the American professional sports, you know, so much money in those sports, but traditionally within cycling, it just sort of shows the kind of some of these guys now commanding, which is great for the sport. Like, I like that. You know, we think it's if it's not the hardest sport in the world, then it's pretty damn close to it. And these guys work pretty hard at it and they're passionate about it. So I think they should be rewarded somewhere near or closer to some of their counterparts in some of the other professional sporting codes. So it's good to see that sort of money up there. But gee, I tell you what, it's got the bank if he has to pay that back.
Exactly. Get the team going for another year. It'd be great.
Now, the other thing that popped up in the headlines was Van Schip. Riding for us, you know, there's a picture of the special bars for Beat Cycling in the Tour of Belgium, and he got kicked off the race for his position. And so the interesting thing was it passed all of the rules and the officials at the Tour of Belgium passed it that morning and everything. But then after reviewing it, they kicked him off the bike race because what I could read about it, it's not so much the bars. They've kicked him off for using that position. So the bars are okay, but you can't lay across them and use the streamlining position that he did, which is what they're actually called, the Speco Aero Breakaway Bars.
Mm. Well, yeah.
If that's not exactly what they were designed for and exactly what he was doing, because he was in a great breakaway and did it really well. But anyway, it got him kicked off the bike race.
Yeah, I actually agree with them being banned. I've got no, you know, they've designed these to over, not, they haven't designed them to overcome the rule changes. These were obviously already in the planning and they've been tested. And these guys, you know, his team are very much in the forefront of aerodynamics and training another level of, very, very fast with their track program as well. And what initiatives that they've come up with that have been super fast team pursuits and things like that. It's the fact that they've let him ride and then disqualified him. I think once you've started, it's okay.
The UCI stepped up. It wasn't the bars. It was the way he rode with those bars. And he was involved in the development of the bars as well. Remember, because it wasn't either guy on the track who came out with those really small handlebars, like about 6 inches wide, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, Glenn O'Shea tried a pair of track bars for the Omnium, actually, because they used to have the flying lap time trial in the Omnium, different format now that we'll see at the Olympics this year. But to try and get more aero, he had a pair of bars that he was trialing before the Rio Olympic Games and at the Rio Games, and they were only something like, you know, 20 centimetres wide, super narrow little things. He didn't actually end up using them in competition. So this is, you know, an alternative, but it is to try and get more aero. And I understand that they've been allowed to use them, but then if you touch the bars with your forearms, then you're breaching the new regulations, and that's why they're disqualified. I reckon that's all bullshit. I think they needed to actually let him get through the competition that they allowed him to ride in, and then disqualify or the bars themselves, to dare them, you know, deem them illegal or whatever you want to do. But once he started the race, you know, of course, he's touched his elbow. He hasn't done what the rules say with the new rule changes, where you're dangling your hands over the top of the handlebars, not holding on to anything. He's actually still holding on to the brake levers. So it's not unsafe to do what he was doing. And if they've allowed those bars to be in the race, then he should be allowed to, you know, at least finish the race. Then they can outlaw the bars afterwards. The way they did it, I think, was wrong.
They haven't outlawed the bars. It's how you ride with them.
But if he's holding onto the brakes, he's still, you know, because the whole
point. Yeah, but he didn't. It's all about where you put your arms and how you ride. You're on the inside. I was just reading the story about it before, and that's what they've said. The bars are still legal. How you ride with the bars is what's going to bring you unstuck.
Okay.
Anyway, well, let's move on.
One other talking point you didn't mention, if he, one of the biggest talking points was Cav, the Manx missile. He's back.
Well,
last stage of Belgium, and there's obviously a bit of chatter around Willy riding the tour, and it's all coming down to cashola again, Scooter. Like, apparently he's not being paid enough to be the main guy for the sprints, so he's trying to renegotiate his deal. And I think if he can hold him to the gun and say, if you want me for the tour, I want another year on the contract. I mean, he's got all the chips at this point, doesn't he?
Well, this win actually gives him back some credibility, but legitimacy compared to, you know, his wins at the Tour of Turkey, which were great, but the competition wasn't so good. Whereas this was up against some real gun sprinters. You know, Caleb had a couple of wins in this race, and he was further down in the top 10, couldn't compete with Cav at all in this in that final sprint. Tim Miller was up in the mix as well. Then you had Groenewegen. So some really good, fast sprinters. The first time that he's actually had a win this year against some real sprinting guns. So,
what was so impressive, Scooter, was if you watch it, the replay again, Malia actually gets past him, actually gets in front, and he comes past him again. It was a very, very good win.
Yeah, it showed strength, didn't it?
But the interesting thing you're talking about, Dan, so it's not that he's saying, I want more money to ride the tour. He said, well, I wouldn't even contemplate riding the tour on my base contract. And the team have said exactly the same thing. What's his name? The team boss?
Patrick Lefevre.
Patrick Lefevre. Come out, saying the same thing. He said, look, you know, we're hoping Sam Bennett can be there. If Sam can't be there, we would have to renegotiate the contract for Cav to be right. Because he should ride the Tour de France on the bare minimum. We'd have to renegotiate that.
Why can't you just go, you signed it, stiff shit.
Stiff shit. Right. The good thing is he's saying it because he agrees.
No. You sign a contract after the fact. Oh, now it all lines up. You want to do the tour. You want more money. Sorry, mate.
That's not how it's gone. You're making it sound like how I won't ride unless I've got more money. No, I've never was in to ride the tour. And he said, even now, he says, I would have said,
Mark, you're in to ride for the team. And if the team wants you at the tour, be a team man and shut up. You're rich. You wipe your ass with 100 euro notes.
Lefevre is saying the same thing. Ride the tour. Lefevre is saying the same thing. He should be. If he's riding the tour, he deserves a bigger contract. And Lefevre is also saying, I might look at it anyway. I might sign him up for next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can both say it, and it's both bullshit. He's signed on.
Exactly. You cynical. I'm a cynical old man.
You know what? He's going to get a contract like HTC days. There'll be the printer in the room the day before the tour, like the old, what was his name? When we had Hanson on talking about, I can't remember the owner's name. And then there'll be a printer and there'll be a shredder in the next room as well. So they'll get it sorted. Hey, we've got a very special guest, Stapleton, Bobby Stapleton. Yes. Yeah. So the media was all like, hey, all good. And then behind, he was holding the gun to the head with the printer on fire. We've got a very special guest coming up. Rupert Guinness, cycling journo. He's an ultra rider now. He's just completed a massive ride from Darwin. He was going to get to Hobart, but COVID got in the way. It's a great story. We'll catch up with him after the break. But before we do, quick word from our great mates at Bike Exchange.
Look at this bike. You think it's just a bike, right? But it's not. It's a bike. 374 people are looking at. This guy, this girl, them. All looking at it. People from here, there, and wherever this is. People that are looking for a bike. Or just a piece of it. Amateurs. Semi-amateurs. And pro-amateurs. This guy wants this bike, but with this crank and these bars. This could be the perfect match. But not this one. This girl has a bike to sell, and thousands of people might purchase it. Eyes on Bikes help grow small businesses. His, hers, yours, and the latest data and insights help those businesses keep moving. We are the world's number one bike marketplace, with over 500,000 products and 900 brands, where buyers and sellers are brought together in a place where a bike is never just a bike. Bike Exchange, where the world buys, sells, learns, and rides.
Thanks again to our great ad. Yeah, it's a great ad. Thanks again to Bike Exchange. Now, before we get to Rupert, let's run through a couple of viewer comments. Michael Albacini on LinkedIn. Jonesy, how are you? Yeah, good, Alba. Hope you're well, mate. Wendy Superfan,
yeah, you know, back. Dan, Albert John, and Scott. Albert could have just sent you a direct message to say hi or give you a call.
Well, I think the video's popped up on the profile and he's thought he could have a chat, but we're having a chat now. Hope you're well, Alba. Send us another message and fill us in. T. Kingo said, has having over 2 litres ever worked effectively? Onsay and Movistar tried it. However, the two Slovenians seem just that level above teamwork needed to make the dream work. What do you think, John?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, if Ineos were going in with like three or four guys who they, but that's not their plan. They've just got such a strong team, it's scary. And they're going in with one real leader and one real reserve in Carapaz. But they've got that rare ability that there's another couple of bike riders who could win this bike race. But most of the teams don't try that. Movistar, the problem with Movistar, when they did it, they weren't strong enough to say it's your ride for him and you're a reserve. They were letting the two be up there, which never worked for them.
Mm. Yeah, and they didn't have the harmony either, did they? Movistar just had the harmony. I know that there was some real infighting amongst their leaders.
Mm. Saw it on that Netflix special. Jason Cruz from the Maldives says, Richie has great form and his Ducks would need to line up within the team. Richie deserves a shot at GC. Couldn't agree more, mate. It's going to be a very interesting month. Now, let's go to our guest, Johnny. What can you say about Rupert Guinness?
Well, Rupert Guinness is a legend. Most know him for his brilliant journalism, and he's written, I can't remember how many books now, it's about 20 books on cycling. I've done 22 or three tours, I think, Tours de France. I think Rupert's done 30-something. Or he's not quite as old as Phil Liggett, but he's up around the 30 mark. But as all of us have been good mates of Rupert over in France, but he's such a busy journalist, he's hard to get out for a drink at times because he's so, you know, working there feverishly, getting his stories out. A wonderful journalist. But he's fallen in love with this long, I don't know if love is the word right now, but with this long distance racing. You know, he's done the Indy Pack. He's done the Race Across America online. Yep. And now, of course, he was doing for Men's Health from Darwin down to Hobart. But unfortunately, as you mentioned, COVID's got in the way. So let's bring him on.
Rupert Guinness, can you hear us?
I certainly can. Can you hear me okay, guys?
Yes.
Yes, Rupert. First off, half your head.
Yeah, just tilt your camera, mate. You've done nippy. There you go. Jeez, you look like you dropped some weight, mate. Hey, how you feeling, first and foremost?
Yeah, James, I haven't got on the scales, but I feel pretty good. Like, the major... The feet, they're really sore, really hot, and my hands are kind of stuffed, you know, as far as the nerves around the ulnar nerve area. But the rest of it, I'm remarkably okay. Just I'm pretty tired, of course, drained.
Can you give us insight into what you've done over the last couple of weeks, and also the what was your motivation for doing such an amazing ride?
Well, the last couple, the ride was hinged on two main principles. One was to, from a race point of view, to give me an experience to prepare for a Race Across America next year, which I couldn't do this year because of COVID, because of travel outside of Australia. Second, Ellen was trying to promote or heighten awareness for mental well-being, mental health, and I think It was a big ask to do two projects at once because, as everyone knows, focus on one element or the other. But it was very important that we attempt both projects, my preparation for RAM and also the campaign I had under the guise of power of the pedal, connecting people, connecting minds. I was quite happy if trying to prepare for RAM was compromised by the campaign for mental health. Because it's really important now, as you all know, but also the power of the pedal campaign, I want to get going on itself. So it's based on ride by ride that I do, that it's an ongoing campaign. So it was an ambitious project, but it was certainly one that provided a lot of unexpected challenges. But as we all know in life, how you respond to those unexpected challenges, that's the time to be better. And right now, myself and the support crew are extremely happy as we sit here in Adelaide with a nice little rosé.
Ah, very good.
Ah, it reminds me of Paris, Monday after Tour de France. That's another story.
Hey, Ruth, is the Race Across America, is that going to be on this year? It's just that you couldn't get there because of the travel restrictions?
Yes. This year it is on. It's actually starting tomorrow, American time, Tuesday, American time. The field is limited because obviously a lot of international riders can't get to it. But it's great that it's still on. The event itself held as a virtual race last year, and that's unsustainable for so long. I tell you, having done the virtual race across America, there was no way I was going to do another 12 days in the garage like that.
That was hardcore.
And I kept reminding myself that, you know, when I was going through the guts of Australia in this ride from Darwin to Hobart / Adelaide, when I felt my worst in the headwinds, I kept on telling myself, shit, this is much better than sitting in a garage, you know, on day 7 or 8. So,
well,
but it's still going on.
Hopefully I'll... You just mentioned, Roop, then about the headwinds. And I was talking to you earlier today, and you said one day you had 300 and something kilometres of block headwind. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was probably now I've revised it. At the time, I said later, it was up there with one of my top two hardest days on the bike, the previous one being in 2017 to the Mundrabilla Roadhouse in the Indy Pack. But on thoughts, this was by far the worst or hardest day. It was, from 2 a.m. Up to 11 p.m. It was a block headwind the whole way, average of 20 to 30 k's an hour. But there was gusts of 50 to 60 kilometers coming along all the time. It was at one point where I did, it was the closest I've got to thinking this is crap, this is ridiculous. I'm going to, not pull the pin, but there had to be another way out. But of course, as you guys know, when you're stuck in a headwind, and particularly in the remoteness of Australia, where there's nowhere, not even a tree to be seen to the horizon, no matter what direction, there's no escape. And you know, you've gone too far, and the only option is just to keep pedaling. And even at that night, when I was still pedaling, of course, I had a support crew behind me, but we had the RV as well that goes ahead. The RV actually came out where we were about 35 k's to go, because they were going to pull me because it was that dangerous, because they heard reports of how dangerous the winds were, and they came out to check if I was physically and mentally in a sustainable position to continue on. And I guess, unfortunately, they thought I was at the time. I remember thinking, geez, I wish they'd pulled me. I would go. But they didn't. And get back on the bike for those last 35 Ks in the dark up to 11 o'clock, knowing that other people have gone to bed, it sucked. But it made for a great anecdote that I'm going to milk a lot of lunches out when I come down to Melbourne.
Now, was that a Jake? Was that a Jake ORV? Just want to check. Is that a Jayco RV?
Yes, it's a Jayco RV from Let's Go Motorhomes. And
of course.
It's been superb. It's been absolutely superb. Home away from home. And the bed, I've got the Voyager model. The bed is bliss. It is the best bed you could ever imagine.
What impressed me is how people could follow your journey. They were doing some amazing content. Obviously, Michael Tom Laris from SBS Cycling Central was along for the journey, and they were doing videos every day. I want to show viewers a snippet of the video from yesterday, which was really good when you got to speak to one of the small country towns.
Through the mist appeared another roadblock, but this time it was a roadblock of a different type. By sheer coincidence, Rupert was welcomed by the strong community of Melrose, the town hosting the annual Fat Tire Festival. And it was an opportunity for Rupert to spread the message of his long ride from Darwin. Young and old, people of all ages, they listened to his every word.
The purpose of this ride, Darwin to Hobart, which is no longer the Darwin to Hobart ride, because unfortunately COVID blocked us going through Victoria and then stopped us from getting to Tasmania. But the fortune of the bicycle, whether it's fat tyres or skinny tyres, is you can go anywhere. You know, a tour doesn't get stopped, a ride doesn't get stopped. You just turn an alternate direction and follow the wind, follow your nose and follow your heart. And I think that's something that bonds us all with the bicycle. And as Tomo said, a large purpose of this ride is to promote the heightened awareness for mental health and well-being. I was very much struck by this cause when I did the first Indy Pack in 2017, where tragically Mike Hall was killed near Canberra. But what I found along the way in 2017 and 2018 was coming through towns like Melrose, when you were struggling, when you were beaten, or you thought you were beaten, you're on your knees, you just needed a smile, a friendly face, and it always came. It always came just when you needed it.
It's fantastic stuff. How emotional has this journey been, Rupert? You talk about, the block headwind days and when you want to give up, but being able to pursue through that and then meeting people along the journey and sharing that message.
Yeah, Jonesy, that was I haven't seen that video since. As you can imagine, I haven't seen a lot of the social media because I've been on the bike and just use it there. It reinforces what it's all about. You know, country folk are great folk. You know, you can be on your busted knees, and you know that people in the country have been struggling. You've got me. You've tapped the nerves now, Jamesy. Gosh.
No, sorry, mate.
You know that they're struggling. They've had bushfires, droughts. Yeah. You know, bushfires that had drought, let alone COVID. And I've had the fortune. I've been fortunate enough to have the chance to do these rides, and I love going to these places. And yesterday was a day where I was trying to get back into the race mode after some couple of setbacks. You know, the headwind days, but coming to a town like Melrose, for example, which I knew they were having a festival, and you can't help but stop. And it's an opportunity, a privilege to say thank you. And I know that they're going through tough times.
Mm. And well, I think it's something you're all right, mate.
Sorry, we're fortunate to be on bike. No,
it's good for the ratings, mate. It's good for the ratings.
Sorry, I'm tired, you know, but I feel very fortunate to have had that opportunity, and it's not just Melrose, you know, as you guys know, it's every country town out there. You've all been there in races, you know, and we've all been in country towns around the world. We're so fortunate to have experienced what we have, and even like, you know, when I was talking about my experiences we're trying to simulate the Ram race experience, you know. Yeah, I didn't get the kilometres I wanted, but that means nothing compared to the moments like that at Melrose or even later that night at Kapunda, you know. And I was actually getting back into race mode, flying along. I had the best, another great 24-hour. I think I did, before we finished in Adelaide, I did 389 kilometres, and I could have finished in Adelaide just an hour or two later, over 400 kilometres, but we stopped, you know, at the top of the gorge, coming into Adelaide, because SBS have been great support. They wanted to film a dawn arrival, you know, so we just slept by the footy ground there. But you know, we had those great moments. But even in Kapunda, there was a family that came out to the garage there, servo. You know, there was a young mother with two kids, her mother and the grandmother and the husband. They came out, and then as they left, there was a bunch of young kids, about 15 of them, and you know, they came out because they saw something was happening. We spent an hour and a half, 2 hours talking to these people. So race mode didn't mean anything then, because I realised that we're connecting with people, you know, power of the pedal, connecting minds, connecting people, and trying to get people to talk. So it was a fabulous experience, that whole one, and just seeing that clip in Melrose, certainly, yeah. Obviously, it touched a nerve. Open the floodgates, but I'm not ashamed, mate, because it's what we're about.
No, you should be, mate. I was being flippant, but you know me, that's what I do. Mm. No, it was beautiful, and the people love you, Rim, because you are. No, they do, because you are transparent and you're honest, and that's the person you are. So it's fantastic, but.
Hey, so I followed you on Indy Pacific Wheel Race 2017, you mentioned before, and you're doing little videos all the way through. Obviously, you know, it's a race and you're spending a lot of time on the bike. Now, that was a solo, well, everyone started together, but pretty very quickly, you know, you're out there on your own, no support crew, which is just an incredible thing to go through. And I actually, when I first heard about that event, I contemplated doing it myself. And it was more about whether I could actually, you know, just being out there on your own with yourself, actually having to deal with being on your own, and, you know, and your own demons. I know you got pretty emotional through that. What's driven you to, one, do that race and or that event, and how hard that was as an individual out there on your own, unsupported, and now continuing on that with the, you know, Race Across America, now this, what you've just achieved. What is it that's within you that you're being driven by?
Yeah, it's a good question, Scotty. It's one which Like originally on his pure basis, you know, obviously in ultra riding, it is a discussion point. What's harder? What's the biggest challenge? Solo unsupported or solo supported? And I guess as a journalist in me, I thought, well, find out for myself, really, and try a supported event. I'll not say one's harder than the other, because they're almost like two different events, almost like comparing, the medley 800 meters with 800 meters freestyle. I mean, they're different, it requires different strengths and assets. Like solo unsupported, yeah, you're by yourself. You totally got to be reliable on yourself. And if you're racing, you've got to be willing to, you got to have minimal amount of equipment. You've got to have that optimal level of food and supply at the same time, as little of it as possible to go as fast as possible. And you're on your own. It's also a lot cheaper. I can tell you that it's a lot cheaper because you just got to pay for yourself. Solo supported, it's a lot more expensive. The Darwin to Hobart / Adelaide ride, you know, will have cost the budget of, will be about 55 grand Australian. To do RAM will cost 100 grand US, you know, for a budget. But on top of that, what are some of the pressures of being a solo rider? This is the first time I've had a support crew behind me and a support car behind me. And I was thinking of those moments, like you think of like moments in the Tour de France stage of the, when there's a car behind you and you're the last rider in the race and, you know, the broom wagon's behind you or you're going like at 20 kilometers per hour and you're busted and you think all you want to do is to escape, but you can't. And having a support car while it's there to support you, it actually adds pressure. Because you're thinking, oh, these poor people, I was about to say something else, they're sitting in the car wondering why I'm going so slow and how long their day's going, you know. So there is actually sort of ancillary pressures which are different. And you also have to, one thing I've had to learn, and we've all had to learn in our support crew, because we'd never done a race before or even a training ride before together. So we didn't know each other, how we respond under duress. You know, I'm talking about after 1 or 2 hours. You're talking about after 12 to 15 hours in the loneliness of a cold night, how different people respond. I get snarky a bit. And I, sometimes I got sick of hearing in the radio loop, stay to the left, stay to the left. And I remember one time I got so sick of being told stay to the left, I deliberately went right across the left, across the shoulder into the gravel. Saying that was my body message saying, is that enough to the left? You know, I was cracking the shit over it. And the things like that, it's really weird. And that we joke about it now. We've been joking about it since. So there's been no friendships lost or anything. But they're very strange pressures that come with it, Scotty. And there's going to be more to learn about it. So it's really exciting from a human experiment, a human social experiment.
What about the road trains, Rupert? They must have, you see them on the TV and they're that long and they go that quick. Were they any effect at all?
No, the road trains, experienced them in impact. At least I wasn't, having some probably goes back to. To another element is learning how to communicate with the road. So the support crew with the radios communicate with them because we had the car was saying, you know, cyclist ahead, flashing lights, and they would, you could see the road trains from kilometres away, particularly at night time, and, you know, they'll just alert the guys coming up or the guys coming forward from ahead of you saying, here we're just, a cyclist, a support crew with a cyclist riding for mental health awareness. We can see you coming. We're ready for you to pass. And there'll be a lot of engagement going on between the support crew and the driver of the road train. And it was always convivial. It was always good. And quite often they would say, oh, that's a great cause. Because I've heard we've recorded some of the discussions of that. And you hear them say, oh, that's a great cause, you know, good on you, and we'll look after you. And then they relay the message forward, particularly Gilbert's trucks. We're going to give a big plug to Gilbert's because they were really good, but so were a lot of others. And the only real dangers we had was coming into Port Augusta the other night where the highway really be quite suddenly. And I guess because Port Augusta, you know, is shipping port, trucks barreling in and barreling out to make deliveries, you know. And it was really sketchy. And we did stop with 52 Ks to go that day. I got in the car for the last 52 Ks because it's just not worth, you know, taking the blackness of night. When there are times when there's only centimetres between you and a road train, and that's dicey enough as it is. But when you start to think this is too dicey, that's the moment to think rationally. So that's too close a call, you know. The truckies were generally pretty, really good.
No, that's good. That's good to hear, mate. Well, yeah, it's been an incredible effort. And as you were saying before, I mean, raising awareness for particularly mental health. I mean, the big takeaway is to be comfortable with your vulnerabilities and to get people talking, I suppose, Roop. And what you've done tonight, even sharing your stories and your journey and being in touch with your emotions is really important, mate. I think that's a really important message to get out there. Scooter?
Just have you learnt something about yourself? Has this changed you doing the, you know, since starting IndyPack and then the, you know, doing the Race Across America? I must say, can I preface this by saying the Race Across America on the home trainer, that is the most insane thing ever, but good on you for doing it because I don't know how you got through that, but now doing this as well. So, you know, what has this changed anything within you and the way you act and feel?
Burgers.
I think the only thing that's is changed is it's really, well, it's probably.
Yeah, mate. We're just having a few internet issues. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, that looked good there. You're right. I think it's reinforced to me the like with a view to Ram, each of these experiences are a learning platform.
Sorry, your internet's just dropping in and out a bit, Roop. That's right. We're used to this on the detour.
Well, I'd just like to say, Roop, I've missed not being at the Tour de France the last, this will be the second year I've missed it. But what I've missed most about that is our Monday lunches, which have become quite famous or infamous. Let's hope next year we're back.
I think we've lost him. Well, it was fantastic having Rupert Guinness on the show. He's an absolute legend, fantastic journo, and what he's doing, I mean, geez, I wouldn't be able to get through one of those days, let alone what he's doing back to back.
Did you watch much of the did you take much notice of that IndyPack, the Indian Pacific Wheel Race that he did in 2016?
Yep.
That was, and obviously it was the tragic end to it all. But you know, I remember watching those videos of Roop that he put up, and he was quite emotional. And I was genuine about saying that I did consider doing it. There was one before that. There was the race to the Rock, and I went from Adelaide up to Ayers Rock, and then the IndyPack was the next one that organisation put on. And I actually, you know, I seriously did contemplate doing it, but one of the things that I stopped, my own competitiveness, you know, and John's the same, you know, we've got this sort of inner competitiveness that you know, if you're going to enter something, you're going to try and do the best you can. Now, I was not going to be competitive against those real ultra endurance riders. They are just seriously something next level, which would have been a challenge for me to be able to not keep up with them. And then it would have been really a race against yourself and lack of sleep. And,
yeah.
You know, like most sort of, I guess, your elite competitors and athletes, you know, we don't go with lack of sleep. You know, it is all about recovery as well. You train as hard as you can for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a day, but then you get a big night's rest, big sleep recovery, so you can train hard again the next day. That's not the way these guys do it. They sleep for 1 hour, 2 hours a day, and then just keep going. And I was genuinely nervous about whether I put myself in that situation, how I would mentally be able to get through that, you know, with lack of sleep and just keep pushing yourself and then not being competitive against those guys, throw it all in one big melting pot. And I was a bit worried about how I'd actually cope with that. So in the end, decided not to do it. So I've got full admiration for the guys that can just, and guys and girls. I think Sarah Hammond is, she's one of the incredible athletes that does it as well. She actually won the Race to the Rock, the first one that they did, against the male competitors. So yeah, she's someone that can sleep less than anyone else. And I don't know how they do it, mate. It's full admiration.
Hey, he's back. You got better internet, Root. You're near the Wi-Fi box.
Yeah, I must be. I've also plugged my phone back in the. It was down to 1%. That must have been a.
It's always the way.
Modern technology.
Yeah, well, if you just said how much he missed you, mate. Yeah, if you just said how much he missed you at the tours and those long lunches.
Yeah, the famous, the infamous Monday lunch. Next year, mate, we're gonna be back. I mean, it started off with just Rupert and I having lunch, and then gradually it became...
No, I was there for the first one, mate.
So was I.
Yeah, we were there. So don't just... You don't take credit.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't. No, you weren't.
We were.
No, you weren't. First time we had lunch was Rupert and I and one of his mates.
We ride today with a bunch of people down here, and one of the people on the ride was... Tiff Cromwell's father, Mike.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. Lovely guy.
Told him about the lunch that year. Not all about that lunch. A little bit of that.
Yeah.
I got as far as us leaving the lunch, and I said I couldn't remember who was carrying who.
No, we won't go there, but it was very funny. Very funny.
Iffy, you wanted to send a shout-out today. There was the Queen's birthday honours.
Yeah, Donna. There she is, Donna Ray Zielinski. She's got a gong today, OAM. Very well deserved. I mean, we forgive her for being born a Canadian, but she's become very much an Aussie. She represented Australia. She rode the Tour de France, but she's been one of the great forces in women's cycling and men's cycling too. She's often race team director of men's teams, but she is a human dynamo, and very, very fitting that she received a gong today.
Yeah, well done. I mean, as a racer and everything she's still doing now, you know, that's totally deserved. Congratulations to her.
Yep. Hey, Root, what's okay, now you've cut this short. By no fault of your own, what's next? What's your plan now over the next couple of weeks, couple of months? What is it that's coming up?
Well, look, probably just to recover first, but also, you know, I'll still continue the training. Like this week, my coach, Marco Ballo from Slovenia, he's got me down. He's been very imaginative. He said, tomorrow's a one-hour coffee ride, and then Thursday is 1 hour easy ride. Friday is 1 hour coffee ride. I don't know what the difference between an easy ride and a coffee ride is, but I may be imaginative. I may include a beer ride and see what he thinks about
it. Rosé sprint.
Well, I did have a couple of beers at the finish yesterday in Adelaide. I had to reshoot the Cooper's Pale Ale, a stubby of beer, which I sculled the first one for a shot, and they said, can we do another second take? So I had to scull a second one. Then they said, can I do another one in the sun? So I had to scull a third one.
And
that was all.
And then you went to the swimming that night, and breakfast. You hadn't had a shower. Is that correct? You and the Tominator?
No. But yes. Well, there's Troy Grice in the orange team kit, and there's some, I think he's a cadet television reporter on the other side. What's his name? I've got a Tomo story for you.
Yes.
At Darwin, we checked into ABC Radio for an interview, and he was listed as Mike Camilaris. Yes.
It would have gone down well.
Calamaris. No, not Camilaris. Calamaris. Mike Calamaris.
Calamaris. Oh,
calamari. Very good.
Hey, Dan, can you throw that photo up again from the swimming?
From the swimming, yep.
Yeah, the one from the swimming. Because you said that, you know, did you go to the swimming after not having a shower? By the reaction of the man behind, who feels quite cold, and the woman in front.
Good pickup, Scotty.
There was a pretty strong odor going on there.
Yeah. Both the boys have got cross-eyed as well.
Shocked.
Yeah.
The boys are shocked. I don't know. We can have a look.
The woman in front, she doesn't look too happy either.
No, it's well picked up. Anything you want to add before we go, boys? It's been a monster show. We've loved obviously having Roop on. Anything you want to add before we wrap things up, Iffy?
Hey, well, let's ask Roop. Obviously, you've been busy the last couple of weeks, but obviously, as a Australia's most a prolific Tour de France reporter, going back to the days of Phil Anderson in his early days, you've been around for so long. What are your thoughts on going into the Tour de France now? It's only a couple of weeks away, and who are the big favourites?
Well, my thoughts are going. I mean, I won't be going to the Tour de France. I haven't got a. I can't get a working gig anyway, so it must be past my use-by date. But I reckon. Look, I think it'd be obviously an exciting tour. I know you were talking about Richie Port earlier. I do believe Richie will have an exceptional tour, and obviously we can see the form that he's in. This season is great. He's in a great state of mind. You know, his whole family situation is very happy and stable, and we know that when Richie's, you know, when he's like that, things go well for him. Also, I think as you're talking about the strength, it's interesting that debate or discussion you're having earlier about, you know, the two leaders or whatever. But I think Sky, Ineos, or Grenadier, whatever you call them now, they do have so many potential leaders. They've shown before they don't mind who wins, even though they'll say so-and-so is the leader and so-and-so is the backup. They don't mind who wins, just as long as the team wins. And those riders all know, even if they're a designated leader, that doesn't rider. That culture in that team now is they know that you may be the number one leader at the start, but that doesn't mean you're going to be the protected rider at the end. And I think for someone like Richie, I still believe he can win a Tour de France. I'll leave it at that. But you need, as we all know, as Cadell showed, you need the perfect environment to do that. Every rider needs the near perfect environment, and that's not a given either. But I think Richie's in the best physical and mental state of his career right now to produce the best possible opportunity to make best of the every opportunity that comes his way. Leave it at that. You know, I just think, you know, he's got his podium. There's pressure off him there that he's strived for. So I would not be surprised if he was in yellow at the end. Sorry, Richie, I've put too much pressure on him now.
I love it. I love it. That's sensational.
Yeah.
There you go.
So that's how
it's going to be very, very interesting, Roop. As we said, we really appreciated you being on the show, mate. You've done a sensational effort. Everyone's getting behind the cause as well and spreading, you know, awareness for mental health. And we look forward to the next adventure, mate. We'll be tuning into SBS Cycling Central Facebook page and following the journey. But we hope we can all get back to the tour again one day and have that rosé lunch for sure. That was obviously the best part of the trip, mate.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't do it otherwise, would you?
Nah. No point. Enjoy your recovery, Roop. You've earned a bit of a break, mate.
No, thank you very much. And I really appreciate your support. And sorry I wasn't able to get back to you when you were messaging. You were both, Jonesy and Iffy, were messaging me. My mobile wasn't operational.
Bullshit. You're at the bloody swimming on the Cairns. That's fine, mate. All good. We'll speak to you soon, Roop. Take it easy.
Thanks, mate.
See you, mate. Thank
you. He was sculling Coopers, mate. He was off his head. That's why he didn't respond.
Yeah, that's it. It's always tougher when you're doing an interview, though, and there's that 4-second delay because you say something and then you get another sentence in and then he laughs at what you said. Then you go, hey, what's going on? But then, we picked that up early on.
But that's just South Australia. Everyone else.
Yeah, that's right.
Everyone that's time, right. It's just South Australia slightly behind.
Yeah, exactly. All right, boys. Cool. Well, thanks for a massive show. We've still got some more podcasts to go before the Tour de France kicks off. No doubt it's cycling. There'll be some story beforehand. We'll be obviously keeping tabs on team selection, if Cav gets right or not. And then teams will obviously be sharpening up before the tour, making announcements and see how we go.
The one we didn't mention much about, he did two great stages in Belgium, was Caleb, because Caleb will be going for the green jersey, I reckon. So he's earmarked five stages. So he reckons he can grab Snaffle 5 stages. So we're looking forward to – he's in great form, so we look forward to –
How many stages has he won already, Scooter, at the Tour?
I'm not sure.
Five, I think.
So Robbie's got the record of 12. So if he has three or four monster years at the Tour – There you go.
He's definitely on target. The difference with Robbie is, and we'll have to wait to see with Caleb, with Robbie, he was saying every year was always listed as one of the top three sprinters in the world. And that went across generations. You know, so he against Zabel and Cipollini was in the top three. Then you had Pisaki came along as the best sprinter, you know, for his sort of couple of seasons. But Robbie was also listed up against him as well. And he went right through as some of the sprinters came and went. Robbie was still in that top three list of top three sprinters in the world. So he had an incredibly amount of longevity as a top sprinter. And you see with time trialing as well, the guys will come and pop up for 3-4 years. And then they start running thirds and fifths and sixth. And, you know, Tony Martin's a good example. You know, he was unbeatable. Cancellara was unbeatable. And eventually they did become beatable. Robbie was... you know, was one of the top three in the sprinting world right through probably to the last two seasons he raced, which is just an incredible career.
Interesting. All right, boys. Thanks for tuning in to The Detour. As we always say, if you want to follow us, youtube.com/Detour Podcast. Give us a like, share, subscribe, tell your mates about the show, and we'll be back again soon. Thanks, Iffy. Thanks, Scooter. See you again. Cheers.